It's Wednesday, February 22nd, 2017, and this is KBIA's Views of the News. Our weekly roundtable on media behaviors comes to you from the Futures Lab studio at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Amy Simons, and here with me are my colleagues Mike McKean and Stacey Wolfel. On our program this week, some changes coming to Breitbart. We'll talk about the latest controversy to fall upon its now former tech editor, Milo Yiannopoulos. BuzzFeed's newest effort to get its readers out of their little bubbles and to encourage dialogue through comments. We've seen it try and fail in the past. What might make it different this time? And why one newspaper in New England stops publishing police mugshots and thinks that it may actually strengthen the community. There's a lot more that hopefully we'll get to as well, but let's start with the president's latest attack on the news media coming on Friday. It was in the form of this tweet: the fake news media failing New York Times, NBC News, ABC, CBS, CNN is not my enemy, it is the enemy of the American people. That was in part in response to an AP story published Friday that the Trump administration was set to mobilize the National Guard to execute immigration raids. That story was reported out using a combination of documents and anonymous sourcing, meaning more leaks. Trump and his delegates deny what's in the AP report, though there have been some different movements on that front as well. Chief of Staff Rince Priebus did the rounds on the Sunday morning talk shows this week and got into a heated conversation about it with, of all people, Fox News' Chris Wallace.
Here's the problem. When the president says that we're the enemy of the American people, it makes it sound like if you're going against him, you're going against the country.
Here's the problem, Chris. The problem is that you're right. Some of these things were covered. But you get about 10% coverage on the fact you did a very successful meeting with Bibi Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of the UK, the Prime Minister of Canada.
We covered all of those news conferences live. Everybody did.
Right, sure. Yeah, right. But then as soon as it was over, the next 20 hours is all about Russian spies.
But you don't get to tell us what to do,
right? Nothing's happening.
You don't get to tell us what to do any more than Barack Obama did. Barack Obama whined about Fox News all the time, but I got to say, he never said that we were an enemy of the people.
Meanwhile, over on NBC, Republican Senator John McCain had this to say to Chuck Todd on Meet the Press.
You believe the press is the enemy? Do you believe any group of Americans are the enemy of another group of Americans?
I was talking about the period, as you know, of the New World Order. A fundamental part of that New World Order was a free press. I hate the press. I hate you especially. But the fact is, we need you. We need a free press. We must have it. It's vital. If you want to preserve, I'm very serious now. If you want to preserve democracy as we know it, you have to have a free and many times adversarial press. And without it, I'm afraid that we would lose so much of our individual liberties over time. That's how dictators get started.
That's how dictators get started, with tweets like that?
They get started by suppressing a free press. In other words, in consolidation of power, when you look at history, the first thing that dictators do is shut down the press. And I'm not saying that President Trump is trying to be a dictator. I'm just saying we need to learn the lessons of history.
Need to learn the lessons of history. There's a lot to unpack here. And we knew that these attacks on the media were going to continue. But this is a whole new level, calling the media the enemy of the American people.
Yeah, I've been the person on the show the past few weeks that's been saying, calm down, don't get into a fight with the president, focus on doing good reporting. But I got to say, I mean, this is a new level. I mean, that's dangerous language. And I don't compare political statements to, you know, past, you know, regimes like Hitler or whatever. But, you know, the Soviets used that phrase, enemy mm-hmm. of the people, to repress and kill opponents. And I just think that that's going several steps too far.
I agree. We've seen since the 80s probably this pretty consistent attack on the media and what the media report by the Republicans, by the right, and it's been successful. I think you could say that's a big part of why we had the election we just had. But it's never gone this far. It's never gotten to be us versus them in terms of the democracy, in terms of the country. And so it's either a calculated move to see how it works out or just carelessness.
And don't get me wrong, it's perfectly okay for anyone, the president or his spokesperson or any other citizen, to say, you did that story incorrectly, or you have a liberal bias, or whatever perception you want to have or opinion you want to have about the media. That's perfectly fair criticism. But that's another thing to come around and say, well, anything that's negative or doesn't fit my point of view is somehow fake news, or that you're an enemy.
And any news editor is always willing to talk with a source or somebody that's being covered about what did we get right, what did we get wrong, and those conversations can be fun a lot of times to spar a little bit with those people, but that always is about specific things: what in the story was right, what in the story was wrong, not that we're enemies.
And I thought, you know, I thought that you had an interesting link on the blog that was talking about the White House at the same time that the president and Reince Priebus and others are saying that we're enemies, or that we're not, you know, covering the news correctly, or that we're fake news. The White House is refusing to answer reporters' questions. And so when you have a story like a claim that the intelligence committee or community rather is keeping some information from the president, if that's not true and you have sources within the White House that can say that that's definitively not true, then respond when reporters ask you for an answer. But they're not.
So what does it mean? What does it say when you've lost Chris Wallace? When Fox News comes right out and says, Barack Obama didn't even do this. He had his dithers with us, but he never quite went that far.
Well, it means that there's nobody left in the news media who will defend you in that case. And not that Chris Wallace would necessarily be the last guy to defend Trump, but when you call us enemies, then everybody's unhappy with you. And McCain's comment, half joking, half serious, he hates the press, he hates Chuck Todd, might have been a joke, might not have been, it doesn't matter. That's fine. That's an individual thing right there. But
it was kind of said with the signature Stacey Wolfel smile, laugh.
A little too dry.
Yeah,
maybe.
A little too dry. You don't know quite how to read that.
Yeah, and it might or might not. I mean, the president certainly has his supporters, but this might be self-defeating after a while, because a lot of news organizations, they are whining and complaining about what the president is saying, but it's also energizing them. Those that have the resources, at least, are going out there and doing some very aggressive reporting. Team that up with all the leaks that are coming out because of people within the administration that oppose the president, and I'm not so sure labeling us the enemy of the people is a good long-term strategy.
I'd like to think the public will reject this at some point. We're in our journalism bubble, and so we can't think like non-journalists, but I'd like to think at some point somebody will say, no, wait a minute, I do get a lot of important information from the press, and they're not my enemy.
Okay, well, it's one thing to misspeak. It's another to misinterpret. It's another thing to make something up and then blame it on TV news. You know, like the terror attack in Sweden Friday night. That one came at Saturday's rally in Melbourne, Florida, and even the Swedes were confused by it. Yet Trump says he learned of it from watching Fox News. What really happened here?
Well, so Tucker Carlson, one of the primetime hosts on Fox News, was interviewing a documentary maker from Sweden, and his documentary claims that immigration, especially Islamic immigration in Sweden, has led to a rise in the crime rate. And the president apparently saw that story, and then he used that, perhaps inartfully or not quite as articulately as he might have meant to, in Florida, and referenced it in the same sentence that he was talking about actual terrorist attacks in, you know, France and Belgium and Germany.
And it's part of that issue we're seeing now. The president is being briefed, use finger quotes here, briefed in a different way than past presidents, because he watches so much television, as has been reported. And so I was watching Stephen Colbert last night, and Joe Scarborough was on, and they talked a little bit about the president, they think, watches Morning Joe on MSNBC and how they react because of that. So we know that these presidential briefings, if that's what we're going to have to call them now, are coming from news stories of varying levels of believability.
And interestingly enough, I mean, there is a story to talk about here. I think the way that the president deliberately or didn't or otherwise framed it makes it harder for us to have that conversation. But there is a debate in Europe. There is a debate in Sweden about whether or not the open door policy for immigrants is having the impact not only of potentially more security threats, but the impact it's having on the economy there. Now, there's a lot of ways to look at that story, and there are lots of people with different opinions of it in Sweden and elsewhere, but it all kind of gets overwhelmed by this. He said there was a terrorist attack last night in Sweden. He may not have meant it, but it certainly causes us to have a harder time talking about what's really in the news.
And all the finer points are gone. I haven't seen that documentary, so I can't comment on it, but if the president had watched the entire documentary, he would probably be a little better informed about it than watching somebody interview the filmmaker.
Yeah, some of the Swedish police have gone on record in some of the reporting that's happened since then saying that they didn't particularly agree with how they were portrayed in this, that the documentarian has actually been called a madman, take that mm-hmm. as you will, and again, having not seen it or knowing much about him.
But I will say there, it also would be wrong for the news media to sort of ignore the other side of the argument, because, I mean, that's one of the reasons that Brexit happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of the reasons we were so surprised by our presidential election in the news media, because there's a whole lot of folks out there who have these opinions. And if you're not going to cover them seriously, then this is what can happen.
Okay, well, there's been a lot of movement in the last 36 hours or so over at Breitbart, the ultra-right-wing publication that used to be the home to White House senior advisor Steve Bannon. For months, its current tech editor, who actually has resigned in the last few 36 hours, Milo Yiannopoulos, has been at the center of significant amounts of controversy for his anti-immigrant agenda. He's called gay people mentally ill. Mind you, he's gay. He's called transgender people dangerous. He was banned from Twitter after a prolonged sexist and racist attack against actress Leslie Jones. And I could go on. Friday night, he appeared on Real Time with Bill Maher. And this question came up.
Are you the real true face of the alt-right? Because I thought the Nazis were in there. How did they take you on board?
This is one of the enduring mysteries of American media.
Oh, it's
how
a
can
mystery.
This movement be well. A anti-Semitic, white supremacist, hateful, bigoted, racist, homophobic movement, and
with
a gay
Jew
who never shuts up about his black boyfriend is the head of it? Something's not quite right.
Yeah, except that like they're not all your fans. Some of them are your fans.
No, they hate me. They hate me. I'm right. saying this is no, the alt
right. I like you.
They don't all hate
you. You see, this is what the media doesn't report.
But
the Daily Stormer hates me. They declared holy war against me. The worst people on the very far left and the very very far right all hate me. They all hate me.
Okay.
I think you're leaving out a lot of people.
But you're welcome here.
There's some laughter going on here at the desk with me. That was comedian Larry Wilborn who made that last statement about leaving out a lot of people. And that was before some of the latest incidents, which has even those in the more moderate spheres walking away. As I mentioned, Milo Yiannopoulos did resign from Breitbart yesterday. That was after CPAC had rescinded an invitation to speak there, after Simon & Schuster decided not to publish a book of his.
Well, I mean, you know, he says a lot of people hate him, and maybe it has to do because he says a lot of hateful things. I mean, you quoted some of them. I mean, in a very real sense, he doesn't have anybody to blame but himself. On the other hand, I mean, I'm glad that Bill Maher had him on. Even though some, I think there was a journalist, Jeremy Cahill, I believe, decided I'm not going to mm-hmm. show up because you've got him on there. Okay, fair enough. But I like the fact that there are still some shows on pay cable where you can actually have these kind of debates and you can say whatever you need to say or want to say without the worry about the FCC mm-hmm. you know, jumping down your throat for using dirty language or whatever it might be. And I mean, I think that there was a useful discussion that was had there. And if you watched the entire overtime segment that mm-hmm. you showed us, I think people could come away with a, not that pedophilia is right. I don't think anybody's going to draw that conclusion from his comments. But there were more subtle and sophisticated arguments being made there than just, you're a racist, you're a homophobe, no, I'm not, people hate me.
There was a way to learn a little bit more about the alt-right movement. I just don't think Yiannopoulos personally is a very good spokesperson for it, because it's just his personality type to say outrageous things and do outrageous things for attention. And it's been, since we have a president who says and does things that many people consider outrageous, it's been harder for him to get attention. And listeners and viewers, you heard it here first. I would not be surprised if he comes out in favor of cannibalism in the next 6 months, because he has to keep ramping
again,
it up.
There's the Stacey
He has
Wolfel
to keep ramping it
humor.
Up to get attention. He won't be able to get attention anymore.
So, Mike, you bring up this idea of pay TV becoming a platform for that and to learn more about it and for him to speak. I think back to some really complicated feelings that I had last month when he was scheduled to speak at UC Berkeley, and there were literally fiery protests, like with flames, mm-hmm. on campus. And at the last minute, he was asked not to speak and that event canceled. And I remember that night having some very mixed feelings about that, given that it was a state university that had brought him there, and that maybe does that fall under limiting of First Amendment rights in some of those ways that...
Yeah. I can understand a university responding one way when there's actual physical violence occurring. But I also think there is a larger issue about many universities in the United States suppressing people being invited to campus because they have unpopular and often conservative views that some students and some activists don't like. I mean, a lot of unlikable characters create important case law and decisions for the United States. We can think all the way back to the 70s and the Nazis wanting to march in Skokie, Illinois. Or you can think of, you know, a lot more recently than that about the Westboro Baptist Church people. I mean, not very many people support the things that come out of their mouths, but they have a right to speak. And when government agencies, whether it's a university or a city government or whatever, says you can't speak, that's a problem.
Yeah, I think I would like to see these speakers appear on college campuses. I guess what I don't like is when they get paid. I hate the fact that mm-hmm. we're paying people with these. But we've seen graduation speakers, typically not paid, who've been protested and dropped. And I think that's wrong. Again, I mentioned the bubble before, and we have to break that bubble open.
Okay, well, I want to read you a tweet from the St. Louis Cardinals outfielder, Dexter Fowler. He said this over the weekend. For the record, I know this is going to sound absolutely crazy, but athletes are human and not properties of the team that they work for. That was in response to days of heavy criticism he took for commenting on Trump's travel ban and the direct impact that it has on him and his family. Fowler's wife is from Iran, and she and her sister have had a hard time returning to the U.S. and other family members, too, since that executive order had come down. Fowler, when asked about it, called the order unfortunate. But what was reported in some places came off as a direct criticism of Trump and of his administration, something that some baseball fans didn't appreciate. Earlier this morning, as I was getting ready to come and do the show, I found another article that I hadn't had time to share with you yet on sportsonearth.com. And it has a bunch of bullet points of things that Fowler did not say. He did not say Donald Trump is a terrible president. He did not say Donald Trump is a bad person. I think Donald Trump's Muslim ban is evil and anti-American. He did not say I disagree with Donald Trump on most political issues. He did not say I voted for Hillary Clinton. He did not say if you like Donald Trump, you are a bad person. He did not say I am attempting to make a strong political statement right now. Yet it came off that way.
We don't really know what his political feelings are because he was putting it in the context of my family. He said, my wife and I can't even think about taking our child to see his relatives overseas for fear about all of that. But that's all he said. And yet, and I'm sorry, I'm a broken record on this show, but the social media fueled outrage, basically you have all these people saying, shut up and play ball, when he was being very respectful in his response. So it's typical, and it's sad that this is what happens anytime somebody says anything now.
We saw it with Tom Brady back in terms of his accusations against him that he was supporting Trump. But the tweet you put up there raises interesting questions, and I'm the last person to be a sports historian, but Curt Flood back in the 60s on the very same team, St. Louis Cardinals, raised similar issues. Then it was about ownership, and he was comparing it to slavery in terms of how players were bought and sold. And so it's interesting that it comes up for the Cardinals again, but it does raise the question, what can a employer expect from its employees in terms of conduct? And it's a very public employer and employees that have very public persona, but that's the question that it raises.
I mean, I think the parallels with Kurt Flood are really interesting, too. I mean, this is back in the 60s, and the team had a much different attitude about what he was saying because he was directly attacking their economic interests. Mm-hmm. And so they traded him. Mm-hmm. And he said, I don't want to be traded. And he sued. And although he lost in court, he basically ended up bringing free agency into existence with a lot of players' mm-hmm. rights and a lot of astronomical salaries for baseball players that you wouldn't see today. The Cardinals this time around, and I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. I'll say maybe they were sticking up for him for reasons other than economic interest, but they
just paid a whole lot of money to get him.
Now, what, $85 million for 5 years or something? So,
are we about to see sports become a whole lot more political? We've also seen some of these discussions about members of the New England Patriots who may or may not go to visit Trump at the White House.
We saw it on our campus.
Or whether or not Gino Auriemma is going to take his team to go to celebrate the 100. Go ahead. You're saying
we saw it on our campus when the football team came out mm-hmm. in favor of the Concerned Student 1950 group. And so we could see it two ways. It could be teams like that. That worked because the whole team was behind it. And we could see teams, whether it's professional or college teams, go on strike for things that they believe in. Or we could see individuals who start to realize that they have a pretty big platform and that maybe what they think might be important. They run the risk, like people in the entertainment industry, actors and musicians, that they will lose fans over it. But that's a risk I think some of them will probably take.
I do think that you're more likely to see really well-established superstar athletes with multi-million dollar contracts stepping out and talking about this. I mean, Colin Kaepernick with the 49ers, for example, you know, on bended knee when the national anthem is being played, because they will be savaged in social media if they say anything at all is political. But I think there was another angle, and you pointed it out through one of the readings on our blog, and that may also be the fact that we're seeing a lot more of these stories because sports journalists now are much more uniformly liberal in their outlook toward how players are treated, how the institutions like the NFL treat things like head injuries and sexual abuse by their players. So the reporters are focusing on these stories and going to athletes to get quotes for them where they might not have been so likely to do that in the past.
Well, the owners and the leagues have made themselves easy villains in storytelling, whether it's a individual owner who has racist comments that get caught on tape someplace, or whether it's a gigantic corporation like the NFL and what it does. So we love to tell stories, and we love David and Goliath stories. And it's hard to think that an $85 million athlete is David in that scenario, but
you know,
he can
be. Dexter Fowler said, he is still human. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, he is not just a St. Louis Cardinal. Well, we have been grappling for months with the challenge of finding ways to get diverse voices out there, to get news consumers to break out of their little bubbles and to read, see, and hear reporting that comes from sources that might not necessarily lean the way they do. And for the large part, to date, we've failed. Well, BuzzFeed is going to try to take another whack at it and is trying to introduce a new tool that it calls Outside Your Bubble. How is this going to work?
Theoretically, because it's not actually up yet on either their website or their mobile application, but when you get into certain stories that have a lot of sharing going on at the bottom of the story where the comments would usually be, there'll be kind of a carousel where you can flick through on different takes on the story that come from political opinions or political takes that you might not yourself have. The idea is you'll break out of your bubble if you consume any of that content. And so it's a good idea. I'll be anxious to see whether they actually can get anybody to respond.
I think it's a great idea. Disclaimer, my daughter works for BuzzFeed, though she's not involved with this project. But I think it's a great idea if, and we haven't seen it yet, if it sort of forces people to do it. I don't know what the carousel will look like and exactly how that will work. But if it just allows people to choose to do that, then they won't. We know that they won't. So it almost needs to appear as like, oh, I'm suddenly reading something else that I didn't know. I almost have to trick people into reading it.
So, you know, I tried to imagine in my mind's eye what it might look like. And there's part of me that fears that what might happen here is that it might be like what a lot of publications have agreements with a company called Outbrain, where when you're on a news website and at the bottom, maybe before or after you get to the comments, you start seeing these really, frankly, ridiculous links that are on there related. Maybe it has something to do with Mama June from Honey Boo Boo and what she looks like,
looks like now.
Right. or, you know, how to cure toe fungus or something ridiculous. And have we been conditioned to look at those, glance over them, is unnecessary content? And if it takes this kind of form, is that a risk?
I don't know much about it. I bet people click on those a lot. So it might, and at BuzzFeed, it very well could take that form, and that might get more people to click on it than just having it passively there.
I don't know either. I mean, I've conditioned myself to avoid a lot of that content. I also think we ought to think about whether or not how BuzzFeed actually executes this, because they have a little bit of a reputation restoration to do, shall we say, after they published that Russian dossier and no other journalistic organization really did. So if they can carry this out, well, good for them.
Okay, well, turn on the local news, pick up your local paper, go to the local news website, and chances are you're going to find it sprinkled with police mugshots, photos of people charged with crimes, some quite petty, in your town. Here in Columbia, that happens to be people picked up on warrants from everything from capital murder to unpaid parking tickets for failure to wear a seatbelt. Well, the New Haven Independent has a new editorial policy. It will no longer publish the names or mugshots of people arrested unless they are either public figures, the arrest is deemed to be a public emergency, or reporters are able to interview the accused directly. The philosophy here that editors are employing is that it wants to protect the reputations of the people who live there. Is that their job?
I think it's part of the job of the for them to look at the community as a whole. I don't think I have a problem with them taking that on. The middle one, if it's a public emergency, I think.
Yeah,
give them a lot of wiggle room, that's okay. Is it a public emergency if you arrest an arsonist? Maybe so. But I
don't
know why.
I
don't know what showing or not showing a mugshot does to quell an emergency. I'm not sure. I don't get that part. But it's an interesting experiment, and we have routinely shown mugshots in newspapers, on television, of people accused of things that they're not convicted of yet.
Or they plead to a lesser charge, and then that record is out there forever of the charge that was higher up.
There are many countries where that doesn't happen. And so as somebody who perpetrated that for many years, I'm not going to stand up now and say that we've been wrong all these years. But I'm interested to see where it goes.
Well, and I think it even pushes back against a more disturbing trend, which is a lot of news websites now actually run carousels, slideshows of these mugshots, and maybe just a little bit of information totally out of context to sell advertising. And so it has even more of a damaging effect. And I also think it's kind of plays into something that you've talked about for a long time, Stacey, which is this notion that news organizations can create a fear of crime by constantly focusing on it to the exclusion of other stuff.
We know that African American suspects disproportionately have their mugshots shown compared to white suspects, so that does affect us on race there. And the other thing, the big loss here is, how will we see these really beautiful and handsome suspects that those mugshots run around, that they become models later if they don't run this? So I am worried about that.
Remember that we talked about that guy, the hottest felon ever.
Exactly.
I forgot about that.
I think he
that.
Got like a modeling contract.
I think he did. We may have to do another Views of the News Wayback Machine like we did last week. Well, we are pretty much out of time for this week. I'd like to thank you for spending the last half hour with us. You can read more about the topics we talked about on today's program. Check out the Links blog on the Programs tab at kbia.org. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @views on KBIA. These are all great ways to watch and listen to our program again, leave us comments or questions, see previews of what we'll be talking about next week, and more. Our thanks to RJI's Travis McMillan for directing today's show, and to Pat Akers for handling the audio. Tim Pilcher composed our original theme music. Travis Meyer is our associate producer, and I'm Amy Simons. Be sure to join us again next week when we're back with you for another edition of Views of the News.